They like Marco because he's bilingual, because he's calm, because he's level-headed, because he's strong character. They think JD is too aggressive. It's like, Avi voted for Trump 3 times. Trump has terrible character. He's not calm. He's not level-headed. He doesn't want to mend fences. He can barely speak one language.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're going to Louisiana, which in all of my years of doing focus groups, I have never done to cover an election. So why start now? Well, because Senator Cassidy is really on the ropes as he runs for re-election. You may remember him as one of the 7 Republican senators who voted to convict Donald Trump after January 6th. Good for him. I was a big Cassidy stan in the wake of that, because that meant he wanted to bar Trump from ever holding office again. Unfortunately, after Trump won his re-election in 2024, Cassidy has been now a force for sort of rubber stamping a lot of Trump's worst impulses, not the least of which was giving Robert F. Kennedy Jr. the key vote he needed to become HHS secretary, in which was a pretty obvious self-serving tactic to try to get back on MAGA's good side, but it does not look like it's worked. Sadly for Cassidy, Republicans in Louisiana have a very long memory about his impeachment vote, and he may finish 3rd in this primary, getting locked out of the runoff. In the back half of the show, we also have some surprising focus group audio about the Marco Rubio boomlet that we have been watching, because we're seeing a lot of it in our focus group, so stay tuned. We're also going to test the waters on the Don Jr. presidential run that JVL talks about so much. My guest today is adopted Louisianan Tim Miller, host of the Bulwark podcast, my co-host on The Next Level, and my, you know, friend in all things, Tim Miller. What's up, buddy?
What up, Sarah? Thank you for the invite. I was happy to do it. I love hearing the Louisiana accents, the best accents in the country. I will say, for listeners like me who find the Focus Group podcast a torment at times, listening to the entire Focus Group unedited without Sarah's takes in the middle, just listening to all of it, being in the room with these people for hours at a time, is a torture only Sartre could imagine. I mean, it's brutal, and I honor you in all things for continuing to do this.
You don't love it. You don't listen to them and still see. You don't find like glimmers of hope. You don't find places where the humanity really shines.
I love
humanity. Through.
I'm closer to you than I am to JVL on this question. I love being among the people, I love being at a jazz fest, I love talking to people. Here's what I don't really love: hearing idiots tell me what they think about politics for 2 or 3 hours at a time. You know what I mean? Like, I'd love to listen to this group talk to me about their favorite gumbo recipe, what they think about Lane Kiffin, you know, what anything, how their kids are doing, what their life aspirations are. Having to listen to their politics takes, it's a specific torture, and it's tough for me, but I did it for you and for the
listeners. I appreciate that. I will say, and this is my rejoinder to everyone who makes a similar point to you, that democracy is made up of these voters.
I know.
This is what we're working with, and I think it is essential as we navigate this moment to understand what it is we are dealing with in terms of people across the political spectrum. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this episode and you want to see us in person in California, go to thebulwark.com/events. Tim, Sam Stein, and I will be in San Diego on May 20th and LA on May 21st. Come hang out with us. Okay, Tim, we're going
to
start with
you. You know how I've started to do that now? I have this tick. I do okay. It's a you. I have this tick. I've picked up your tick.
I know. People in the office here do it, too. It's just a Sarah-ism that, like, gets contagious. Okay. Since you are there in Louisiana, and actually, before I even get to Cassidy, just give us a quick primer on Louisiana politics now that you're down there. Like, what kind of state is it?
Like, it's so interesting because the local politics is, like, very vibrant. And it's a little less so now. I think now the Democratic Party has become so weakened and eviscerated. Like, but there was a period of time where you had, I mean, John Kennedy was a Democrat. They talked about this in the focus group, right? Like, where you had these conservative Democrats, and then you had kind of the Black Democratic faction, and Creole and Cajun voters, and you had the social conservatives. And it's Louisiana, so you have a like more so than like Alabama or whatever, you have people who are conservative impulse voters, but are also, you know, partiers and cussers and all that, right? You know, so it's very, it was, I think at one time, very dynamic. And, you know, I had a bunch of friends that worked for Buddy Romer and various things who'd worked for races down here who tell stories of tales of yore. To JBL's newsletter recently from the Triad, like there's been an inshittification of Louisiana politics too. It's just like Trump has overtaken everything. The state has become so Republican, it's become like a one-party state where it's like not that interesting, really. I remember going to Louisiana Republican Convention a year or two ago just to kind of get a sense of what's happening on the ground. And people feel there just was not a lot of energy. People feel very kind of checked out. Like I do feel like it's kind of ripe for disruption in a way. It was interesting listening to the focus groups. You hear a lot of these people, they don't really love any of the candidates. They're kind of frustrated. I think Louisiana's kind of ripe for some kind of Louisiana-ish Trump. If John Kennedy wasn't so old, like maybe that could be him because he's kind of distancing from Trump in ways. And so it probably wouldn't be something that like I would like in particular, whatever that person was, would emerge. But I do think the state is kind of ripe for it. And then here in New Orleans, it is much more dynamic politically. And like there's like very big, you know, like New Orleans versus the rest of the state, you know, type dynamic, which you see in a lot of kind of southern states where, you know, there's a lot of tension between city politics and state politics. And for a while, there was a lot more comity there. And I think now less so. Like the current governor is very hostile to New Orleans. And you know, so I think this kind of new that I'm the, that dynamic has become much more acute recently, so I'll kind of see how it plays out.
This is not what we talk about in this episode, but it's probably worth noting that one of the other things that has got me looking at Louisiana lately is that they're one of the states where the VRA that was just sort of gutted by the Supreme Court, they're like holding off on their primaries so that they can redistrict really fast and try to
get... They're nullifying votes. 42,000 people have voted. I could go vote right now as we're taping this, and the House... races would be on the ballot, and they're going to cancel those votes and move on. You know, we don't talk about this. It's interesting. One of the dynamics of Louisiana politics is, as I was just talking about all those factions, like part of what they're doing and this attack on New Orleans is that the second majority district that they had added, they drew around Baton Rouge, big black population in Baton Rouge too, in part because a lot of the MAGA Republicans here hated this guy Garrett Graves, who was in the Kevin McCarthy kind of wing of the party, and that was just a little too rhino-ish for everyone, and so they drew him out. And now what they're talking about in this map is to keep that new district that prompted the lawsuit around Baton Rouge, you know, kind of somewhat intact, and that representative was more moderate black congressman, and carve up New Orleans so that New Orleans doesn't really have a representative anymore. And I think that's part of the dynamic that's at play here.
So Cassidy, I want to set the stage because we're going to get to the voters, but it's not going to be a surprise. Spoiler alert, the voters are down on Cassidy. Let's have a real accounting of our feelings about Cassidy. Cause both of us, I have some guilt around Cassidy, in that I desperately wanted Republicans to vote for impeaching Trump. I wanted to protect all of the Republicans who took those votes. I thought that was really important to try to help people who took that sort of brave stand. Problem is the way, not all of them, but some of them have sort of re-engaged with Trump after his election. Like they've basically all run in this direction of like Cassidy has of trying to protect their own political careers from that vote by showing just how on side they are subsequently. And Cassidy has been particularly difficult for me to swallow because he's a doctor who knew exactly how dangerous RFK Jr. was to medicine in this country, health in this country. And he took what I consider to be like one of the worst votes in the Senate. How much can we demand of these people? And like, should we stick with someone like Cassidy and continue to support him because he took that brave vote? Or do we have to judge him? Should we judge him by the things he's done subsequently? How do you think about it?
Yeah, I'm going to free you. I'm going to give you a Louisiana Catholic penance here on this. And it's because the people that took a vote to convict Trump or to impeach Trump in the House, like, deserved defense and cover. They did. Like, they took, it was a very challenging vote, a brave vote, really. And there have been several of them that have since gone on to do things that annoy me, including Peter Meyer in the House, who's now like on CNN saying the most annoying things all the time. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that you did one brave thing. We get to shower you with praises forever in life. You know, you have to continue to act with integrity. And I thought that Bill Cassidy did. I think I would have given a lot of leeway to somebody like Bill Cassidy to do various things, to demonstrate that he still was a conservative, you know, but that this was a principled stand. But like, there are just limits to that leeway. And what Bill Cassidy has done, which we're going to find out in these focus groups, is I think really tank his credibility with everybody. Yeah. It was a choice that he made. It wasn't a choice that he had to make. And I don't, you know, I think that it would have been very challenging going any route for him to be reelected to the Senate. There are greater things in life than being in the Senate your entire life. But had he wanted to try, I do think that there was a path of running with integrity and trying to do like an Evan McMullen style thing or Dan Osborne, right? Where he could have said he was going to be an independent, or John Fetterman. How about Fetterman is a decent example. Fetterman votes with the Democrats 91% of the time, but just on key things doesn't, and the Democrats don't like him, and that's never going to change. Cassidy could have tried that approach, like voted his conscience on conservative issues, said he was going to run for re-elect as an independent. The Louisiana Democratic primary is it's maybe the weakest recruitment field in any state in the country, and even Alabama, Mississippi have decently credible candidates running this time. We don't are the people that are good. I've met them. They're nice people, but it's just there's no juice. And so imagine had he decided to do that, like let this MAGA primary play out, run as a conservative independent, follow up his integrity on RFK Jr. He was a doctor. He was a vaccine advocate. His wife is as well. Opposed RFK, opposed Trump when he does corrupt things, but still support whatever conservative MAGA policies. If you wanted to vote for the stupid, big, beautiful bill, whatever, run as an independent. I think he probably still loses, but I don't, maybe not though. Who knows like how bad the economy gets. We'll see how things go in red states. That would have at least been a path. I think they would have had an equal chance at success, maybe slightly less chance of success, but more chance of being able to look yourself in the mirror at night. And he didn't do that. He chose to do this. And his ads are disgusting. I guess the one other thing before we get to the focus groups, and you hear this in the focus groups, like the ads here are just, they're everywhere. You can't get away from them. And it is just entirely Julia Letlow is a moderate squish rhino. And Bill Cassidy is the real MAGA. Bill Cassidy betrayed Trump. And Julia Letlow is the real MAGA. That's the only thing the ads are about. It's just they're spending tens upon millions of dollars to do TV ads about how the other person is a rhino and how they love Trump the most. And so if you're going to run that kind of campaign, fuck them. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I am, which is, you took that vote because you knew it was the right thing to do, which means you know all the rest of this, how wrong it is. And you can lose swinging. Like you can go down swinging and saying like this stuff is wrong, or you can lose the way he's losing now. Like you've actually done harm to the medical community that you swore an oath to. You have done harm to America, and like, you're going to get crushed and they hate you. Like, I don't know. I guess I can't quite find it in my heart to be sad for him because of the damage that he's done. But sometimes I feel guilty about that. I'll just name that. All right. Let's listen to how the voters talk about Cassidy right now. And just to be clear, for this episode, we did two groups of Louisiana Republicans who are voting in their May 16th primary. Let's start by listening to how they talk about Cassidy.
Bill Cassidy, outdated.
He's slimy, in my opinion.
He reminds me a lot of the 80s politicians, where he's very two-faced. Well, I don't know how to say it that way. A lot of these guys, and it's one face for the media, and then it's another face for the public. It's one of the reasons why I'm kind of turned off a little bit by him right now.
Anybody trying to impeach my man Trump doesn't have my vote.
I just don't feel that I can immediately just go vote for Bill Cassidy again. There's something holding me back to like investigate more of the other two people that are running. And I don't know if I necessarily call it slimy, because like I'm saying, I haven't really paid attention to everything he's done.
I've worked but can't sleep. And I was 100% behind him for every election, for it all. But lately, it started with the impeachment of Trump and a lot of other things where he changes his mind. He's just changing too much to, if he believes in a certain thing and he doesn't believe exactly what Trump does, then it's okay. He's changing, he's wishy-washy because he wants to stay in the party. He's not, it's like he's not performing as in his beliefs. He's more performing to just keep the job. And I want somebody in that job that believes and wants to work for his beliefs, not anything else.
If you look at Bill Cassidy 10 years ago as opposed to today, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Like she said, he's slimy. He just seems to be very full of himself. Like he, you know, he's an expert. And whether it be, you know, political field, medical field, or wherever it may be, he always seems like he's got the facts behind him, but rarely does he back himself up.
He was also very vocal during COVID about how, you know, the importance, like wanting to mandate the vaccine, the isolation, things like that. So, I mean, I get he has a medical background, but he was just, he kind of followed Fauci's, you know, trust the science mantra. And I don't feel like he really had the best interest of the people. He had the best interest of his pockets at the time.
Okay. When you say best interest of his pockets,
he was getting paid. I mean, like, I don't know of a better way to put it. He got paid.
Paid by who?
Big Pharma.
I've probably been waiting 6 years to not vote for him for other reasons as well. He now says these positive things about Trump, and he is trying to ingratiate himself with Trump supporters. And there were just too many of us. I wrote him a letter after he did that and promised him that I'd be voting and told him a lot of people would be voting against him. And I think he thought 6 years we'd forget. We didn't forget.
So, Tim, do you feel how do you receive those clips? Is it a little bit of schadenfreude at Cassidy kind of seeing like, you know, this is what you get for running into MAGA? Or is it a like, man, you buck Trump? In a place like there's no room for bucking Trump, and that remains alarming. Like, tell me how you receive it.
Yeah, for sure. There's some schadenfreude. That last guy, me and him, I can agree very much on politics, I wouldn't think, as he defines himself as a loyal Trump supporter. But he was right. Like, show me the lie. And that's how I feel about these Cassidy ads. It's like you literally voted to bar him from running again. And it's not as it's one of these things where it's like, I don't know, you know, had you voted, you know, had you bucked Trump on some big tax policy thing, or, you know, had you spoken out against the corruption of his sons or something, and then you still ran for Senate and said you still think on balance he's good for the country. Okay, like you could imagine a way to do that. Like Cassidy voted to bar him from ever running again. And now his ads are all like, we love you, Mr. Trump. You look so handsome. It's like, fuck you. It's fake. It's fake. And everybody can see it's fake. And so the MAGA guy's right. The thing that that made me feel a little bit of sadness or whatever, listening to all of it, is just nobody's even open to the idea that like what Donald Trump did on January 6th was meriting of some censor. You know, and like that is to me the most depressing part about all of it, that people, I had a lot of disagreements, a lot of takes, obviously, but generally speaking, and that one lady had the crazy theory about how Cassidy's being paid by pharma companies. But, you know, generally, their points were, there are people that follow the news for the most part, and there are a couple of not examples, but, you know, there are people who seemed relatively smart, but just having misguided views, I think, on MAGA and foreign policy and other policy matters. But they just, I don't, there's something about Trump. Like, he has that hold on them that they just can't even abide, like the idea that him trying to overturn the election and sending a mob to the Capitol that killed police officers is something that requires criticism. I forget impeachment, like anything. Like there's just no brokering of any critique of Trump on that. And that's just kind of the partisan tribal brain poisoning that you see. And that part is sad.
Look, I think that one of the things that is, I don't know if sad's the right way to put it, but it is a thing that we have to contend with, which is that as deeply unpopular as Trump is, like as we tape this, he is hitting new lows all the time. We talked on the Next Level when we were taping yesterday about just how bad his polling is. Like there's sections of like lots of Trump voters abandoning him, certainly right-leaning independents abandoning him, Hispanics, young people. It is this grip, though, that he holds on what is a minority of people very much in the country and perhaps half of the Republican Party. Because like, you, again, last night we watched him in Indiana. He decided to seek retribution against the state Senate people who would not redraw the lines to gerrymander Indiana. So he set up a PAC, spent tons of money against them for not doing it, and he beat them. Like he, and so this morning you got reporters being like, see how, you know, how incredibly strong Trump is and whatever. And it's like, yeah, like he still does. He grips the party. He can he can win just about any Republican primary that he wants to. And that's still the state of the Republican Party.
Yeah. And I guess this is kind of the point of the Bush line, so to speak. Yeah. Like, and it's a little different. That's why he kind of has to get a little lower than that, because Bush was like dropping with Republicans at the same time, at the same rate as dropping with independents and Democrats. And that isn't happening with Trump really. But like, that's the point about getting is like, how can you get lower enough where his hold is not great? Like there'll be obviously people that are with him to the bitter end, but where that number starts to dissipate. You see some evidence of that in the conversation that you tease, which we'll get to, about like how the party should look in the future. There are a couple of lines that just caught my ear. Maybe we can mention as we go along. So, you know, there's like on the outer edges, like you can feel like a little bit of discontent in the groups, but like at the fundamental question of like Trump the man, nada.
That's right. Okay, so there is not a lot of public polling in a race, like a three-way race in a Republican primary in Louisiana, but it does look possible that, as I said before, Cassidy could finish third in this primary, which would trigger a runoff between Representative Julia Letlow, who is the person that Trump has endorsed, and the 74-year-old state treasurer, John Fleming. So I'm going to go through how the voters talked about both these guys, starting with Fleming. Let's listen.
ABC, anybody but Cassidy. I'd be fine with Letlow instead of Fleming. I plan to vote for Fleming, but I'd be fine with Letlow. I think he's a little bit more of a conservative than she is. I guess we don't really know how they are until they get into office, how strong they're going to be. But from what I've read of him, I also had an early impression of him from a couple of years back. I've been following him where I haven't been following Letlow.
I was at the doctor's office the other day, and there was a group of gentlemen that were sitting in the waiting room, and they were talking about Fleming. And they had, one of them knew him from when he was younger. And they were talking about how he's very steadfast and everything, but the fact was that his age was up there. And they all concluded that the reason why he was running was that he felt that the state really needed him to at least get through one more term to find younger politicians.
John Fleming, the way they say, he wanted open borders. I was against that. So, I mean, you look at these candidates and it's like they don't vote for the people once they get in. Right now, all they're doing is telling you, oh, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to take... Oh, have they ever enacted a bill? I mean, it's like they got a free lunch. That's all I have to say. I look at Fleming. He doesn't look too promising. It's just that when we go to vote, we really don't have really good candidates anymore. It just seems like they all have some kind of skeleton in their closet. They took money from somebody, inside trading, had affairs, stole money. You just get sick of when they have an election because it's just, all it is just smear campaigns to me. I just wish we could get somebody different, totally different, new ideas.
I'm going to play the Letlow sound next, unless you have something specific you want to talk about from that sound.
No, I just Fleming doesn't have the money, and Trump endorsed Letlow. It does feel like that there is appetite. I mean, obviously, there's appetite for a more true MAGA type candidate here that just didn't emerge for various reasons. But yeah, I mean, I think that it was funny listening to everybody. I thought maybe there was a path where Fleming sneaks through just because Cassidy and Letlow are crushing each other so much. But I don't know. I suspect the Trump endorsement probably prevents that from happening.
Yeah, I mean, we'll play the Letlow sound, but to me, what was interesting is we selected these groups because they said they were going to vote in the primaries, right? And so they are actually kind of plugged in the sense that they're following politics. They're going to vote in a Republican primary. At the same time, they did not have a great sense of the candidates. Like, they seem to, this is one of those where sometimes people are like, do ads make a difference? And I'm like, listening to these voters, they're just repeating stuff they've seen about the candidates from the ads that they're getting bombarded with. And so the candidates themselves don't seem to have broken through in a way that has connected to these people. Yeah. All right, let's listen to how they talked about Julia Letlow, the one that Trump endorsed.
I'm for Letlow, for sure. I don't really know a whole lot about Fletcher, but Letlow, I think she has more of a presence. I've heard more, not in trying to dig information up, but, you know, she comes up more so than Fleming has on my end.
There's a commercial on where Trump is supporting her. But then I saw from one of the other candidates, maybe it was from Cassidy's camp, saying that she had done some things that were very much on the socialistic side. I was thinking about, why would Trump do this? She's pretty much a newbie, right? She got into politics because her husband passed away, that whatever. And then I thought, knowing Trump, maybe he wants a weaker link there who will definitely be a true 100% follower and not question or not give any blowback at all. And if that's the case, then that's sort of a negative, because I want someone who can be their own person, especially a woman, but only from literature that I read that came through direct mail that I see anything about her liberal dealings and her liberal voting. So again, just because somebody prints it doesn't mean it's necessarily true.
I can't vote for Cassidy after he voted to impeach Trump. So then I'm left with Fleming and Letlow, and Letlow seems like the better option. I'd like that she's a woman. I feel for her being a mother and a widow. And I think she's the middle ground of the race.
I feel like she's more left-leaning, and she's somewhat deceitful when she gives her speeches out to the public. But behind closed doors, I think she votes more liberal, more like DEI and other things and LBG, whatever, all those kind of issues. I think she's more left-leaning when it comes to those things. So she's not a solid Republican, as far as I can tell.
I do like Ms. Letlow. I have some of the things she's focused on. I think for me personally, there's two issues in particular is crime and education. Trump might be looking at her as, a possible candidate simply because of that. She might appeal to more woman voters.
Okay. I hear a bunch of things in here that I find interesting. One of them is, as I try to explain to people all the time who kind of want to pick apart how voters talk, and I'm like, guys, this is not linear. Like, this is, if you're looking for like a real linear through line, oftentimes you're not going to get one. And one of the obvious things is Cassidy is getting bombarded with hate because he went against the team. The rest of the criticism for some of these other guys is that they don't think for themselves enough. They're like, right. they're,
And to me, this is classic. When people are like, well, what do voters think? I'm like, guys, like, it's not always a through line here.
Yeah, they're not thinking that much. It's like, and then they've got a lot of deep theories about what might be happening. Maybe it's the pharma company. Maybe Trump has a hold on her. Maybe it's because he wants women voters. It's just kind of like, guys, it's not like, maybe try to read up on what's actually happening. But it's, you know, it's easier to concoct theories. You get in this focus group, you got to come up with something to say. I don't know. But the DEI or LBG, whatever, yes. One stood out to me. Some great accents, though. You know, it's not the hee-haw Southern accent in Louisiana. That lady sing again. You know, you got the Cajun. A lot of differentiation in the accents I like. No, they don't like Julia Letlow, really. Like, there's not a lot of excitement for her. They dislike Bill Cassidy. And kind of what I said at the top about, like, the insidification and me going to that Republican event, there's just not a lot of energy, like enthusiasm. You don't see... There's not this deep bench of people. It's different that you kind of need, this is where our old free market Republicanism comes in. You kind of need competition and creative destruction to get, you know, if you look at like, where are the exciting Republicans coming from, at least Republicans that they're excited about it. It's states that are like kind of red, but like there's still some competition there and that's not happening here. And so it's kind of dying out in a way, but I don't know. I mean, she's probably going to win, but there's no enthusiasm, and the whole thing they're right to think it feels like a charade, because it kind of is a charade. Like, she's not a MAGA person, Fleming's not a MAGA person, Trump has to endorse one of them. They kind of want a MAGA person, and I think what they're trying to say when they want independence is is what John Kennedy does. Like, they want somebody that's gonna like spout off when they, you know, disagree about something, but almost in a populist direction.
Yeah.
And like, that's sort of what they're looking for, and there's none of these options are given to them.
Not to take us in a whole crazy direction, but I've been spending a lot of time with Democratic focus groups lately too, and watching how they are shifting in ways that feel, in some ways, I don't know how to say this except for the same but different.
Familiar.
It feels familiar. That's right. It's an echo of what we saw during the transformation of Trump, which is basically the sense of Trump is not far right. People describe him as far right. Trump is, and that's because he's fascist, he's fascistic, but he doesn't exist on this left to right spectrum in quite the same way. And so people who are having an argument over on the Dem side about whether they should be more moderate or more progressive sort of misunderstand what's happening with the voters. And another way to talk about it is sort of establishment versus insurgent, but the insurgent doesn't need to be progressive. The insurgent could be sort of whatever on policy side, as long as it looked like they were going to show up and fight like crazy, right? Because this is the appetite that you can feel. And this is like what it is for these voters too. They don't want normal politicians. Like, the best they'll get is the Trump endorsement, because at least Trump is the non-regular politician picking somebody. But like, it does feel as though if somebody came in as an independent and ran a super populist working class campaign that never mentioned DEI, never mentioned LGB, whatever, like, they could get really far in a place like Louisiana. Like, that's the shift in the politics, is this like anti-elitist, anti-people controlling things. I mean, you hear this is everywhere. And it's not just conspiracies. It's just like the grammar of hidden knowledge is what I call it in the book, with this idea that there's like cabals out there, people pulling the strings. There's something they're not telling us. That is replete. It's like money and politics. Are you shifting anything that you think about just how we talk about politics or how we think about the political coalitions?
I'm going to answer that question, but there's a specific example. There's a gal named Liz who has a great, we call a New Orleans yat accent. And she's saying, I won't try to imitate it, but she goes, is crime better? Is education better? Is the economy better? No. And we don't pay our TSA workers. I don't think they care about the people. I have to vote Republican, but they don't vote for the people. And I think that really kind of encapsulated it for me. Like, that woman was there, was among the people in the focus group we were watching, like, felt like she was following news the most. And I think she ended up saying she'd be for Letlow, but like, that, there were head nods. Like, that idea, I think, is out there on both sides, right? Yes. Like, now what they want, you know, what that woman Liz would want is probably very different from what somebody in like a Michigan Democratic focus group. They could say the same sentence basically, but want largely different, you know, policies and candidates. But that is out there. I think that it's ripe for the taking. And I don't know. There's something about maybe it's the internet age where things spread so quickly, where like conventional wisdom becomes, everyone accepts this conventional wisdom so quickly that you end up getting people that sound a lot the same, you know, on both sides. Or maybe a couple different types of the same, you know, like you have the populist guy and the establishment person on both sides, and then that's it. They're like four different brands. And people want something that changes it up and mixes it up. And I do think, I don't know, I don't actually know what the answer is, but the more I listen to stuff like this, the more I'm like, I do think that someone could in this moment or soon reorient the coalitions in a way that people don't expect. And that could backfire too, but I think that it's possible with the right type of, you know, populist or populist adjacent type of messaging.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to talk about my book too much because
really?
A while before, I'm trying to dial it back. I'm trying to dial it back, okay? Because nobody gets, I can keep talking about it, but people can't actually read it. And so this is like an annoying little juncture here where it's not out there, but like I know what I said in it. Mm. And like the thesis is kind of this, is that there is a world for a political, this is why it's like, people are like, Sarah's a centrist or, you know, whatever. And I'm like, this is not the politics. Yeah, but this is not the politics of Sarah Longwell. Like, it's just not my part. It is the politics of the people that I have listened to. And what is so clear to me is like, people are pitchfork at the ready on the right and the left against elites, against people they think are controlling these. But what they want is that they're kind of filling in the gaps with that. What they want is for everyone to focus on their material well-being and the opportunities to get there, which is education, which is the jobs, it's the economy, it's how do I afford, how do I make the trade-off choice between childcare and having a job? It's how do I afford healthcare in an environment where healthcare is becoming increasingly unaffordable? Like, that's what people talk about and think about. And so like, when they get mad about the ballroom or when they get mad about LGBT whatever, most of that is just like a, why are you talking about that? I don't care about that. It's not even that they're hostile. Like the number of Democrats in the focus groups who are like, I'm cool with trans people. Trans, great. I don't care. They're grownups. Let them do whatever. But can we stop talking about it? Because it doesn't do anything to lower the rent prices of me and my friends or like the job opportunities or like, what are we going to do about AI? Even the gerontocracy, right? The down with the gerontocracy feeling is related to that too. It's like, be strong enough and vibrant enough and young enough that you understand this new world we're living in and the technology that's advancing and the way that it's impacting the economy that affects me. And so like, there is a whole world for the taking there, in my opinion. If somebody would just do like, I'm going to focus entirely on people's material well-being, like that almost doesn't matter about what the precise solutions are, while saying we wanted a closed border, but some plan to allow immigrants to come here the right way. And like, don't talk about the DEI, LGBT, whatever. Like, doesn't mean that you don't have it. Just like, it shouldn't be what you lead with because the vast majority of people don't, like, they'll fight about it if you throw it as chum in the water. But that's not what matters to their lives. This has been bubbling up. I wrote a piece for The Atlantic. Usually I write pieces for The Atlantic just to make JVL mad. About this, about the fact that I am hearing in groups pretty regularly a lot of praise for Marco Rubio. Now, I can't tell quite if that is because people hate J.D. Vance as an alternative, if it's because Marco seems like the one grown-up in this idiotic administration. I think it kind of has to do with that meme where Marco ends up with every job because he's the one person they give stuff to. He's the only one who knows how to do anything. So I've got a mashup here of the Vance-Rubio sentiments we've heard.
Before we get to it, can I just say, I just gotta shout out my mother.
Yeah, why not?
I was on the phone with my mother last night. She was listening to The Next Level this week, and she had written down notes.
I'm so embarrassed she listened to that, to us do all that Bush line, Dick line stuff.
It is. It's kind of weird. I try not to.
Sorry, Mrs. Miller.
To be honest, I know. She's not a cusser or a sex talk person, so I'm grateful that she's listening. But she said I was too positive about J.D. Vance's prospects and too negative about Marco's. And she's like, with my friends, she's just like, I need to tell them that it's like, people are ready, are moving to Marco. And so she tells me that last night. And then I listen to these focus groups this morning. So anyway, shout out to my mother for her political analysis.
Let's listen to the clips.
I think it's amazing that Marco Rubio, he's bilingual. I think that's neat to have someone with that ability.
Okay.
He comes across like he knows what he's talking about, and he seems confident. I would definitely vote for him over J.D. Vance. He's a good vice president. I just don't know that he definitely wouldn't be as strong a leader as Trump is.
I wouldn't put all my eggs in Vance's basket. So, of course, I don't want to hear what Rubio has to say.
I know J.D. Vance has experience, but I find that Marco Rubio is just very polished and poised. He's very quick-witted, so he's able to react quickly. But I don't feel like he reacts with any kind of, like, I feel like his reactions are very well gauged for the situation.
Marco Rubio has just done a phenomenal job. With like all of the PA, I feel like he's going to every hostile country lately and negotiated peace treaties and tried to just make people be friends almost, but, or at least just be civil to each other. So I feel like he's done a really, really good job with that.
As vice president, he really is just a spare, when he's needed. You don't see him doing as much as Marco Rubio. So that's why a lot of attention isn't on him. If there's a vote breaker, he goes in. He may travel. He may do speeches. But I just see Marco Rubio as a person that, as far as he's more level-headed and can speak to somebody without really putting them down. J.D. Vance, I like him, but sometimes he appears too aggressive when he talks.
I think he's also going to be a great candidate, not only because he's Latino, which I think he'll go much further towards maybe mending a lot of fences, I guess, because of... you had the immigration policies and then just a lot of the policies that have taken place in the last couple of years as far as, the big cities with the immigrants. I think he'll mend a lot of fences that way.
J.D. Vance is going to have the same problem that Kamala Harris had. Right now, people are kind of struggling with the economy, the cost of living, stuff like that. And I think that maybe a failure to distinguish that, if it continues all the way into 2028, he's going to lose because people want change. And then Marco Rubio, he doesn't really stand out as a person.
I just think America's blessed to have either one. So I'm not, it's kind of a toss up and no telling what issues could come up or changes in the next couple of years. But it's just all pros and no cons for both of them for me.
I'm just amazed at the quality of people that are attracted to work for Trump. I think the key is they both represent the great American story from their backgrounds, where they came from as young people and how they built themselves up into this. It's just, it shows you the quality of the bench of the Republican Party. So I don't think you can lose with either one.
Like Vance, but I think Marco Rubio has a stronger character. And I think more people would probably, more Republicans would definitely vote for him than for Vance. Maybe him as for running as president and Vance as vice president again.
So to be clear, plenty of Republicans we talk to still like J.D. Vance fine. Like, there's a lot of people who just see him as like heir apparent. Like, that's in there. But Rubio's entire brand has become sort of like toughness and competency, while Vance is like mini Trump, kind of.
Angry. This is the part that's enough to make you start cutting. They like Marco because he's bilingual, because he's going to mend fence with Latinos, because he's calm, because he's level-headed, because he's strong character. They think JD is too aggressive. It's like, I'll be voting for Trump 3 times. Trump has terrible character. He's not calm. He's not level-headed. He doesn't want to mend fences. He can barely speak one language. Like, what? What? And so, like, this is where it's just like, we know nothing. Nobody knows anything. We can pretend to know. We can think. But, like, the power of rationalization is so strong. And I think that just a lot of this is, like, people backfill. Like, they decide they like somebody for whatever reason, mm-hmm. and then they backfill reasons. Yeah. Right. And so it's like, I like Trump and I like him because he's gruff and he says what he thinks and because he's whatever. And I like Marco and it's because he's calm and he's measured and he's level headed. And it's, you know, and so I don't know. It'll make you pull your hair out. But that's the part that it's like, okay, well, that rationale for Marco cuts against what you're saying earlier. Like if people, you know, maybe Republican voters at some level get, you know, not that they want to go back to the old Republican Party, don't get me wrong, but maybe they've gotten enough of a fill over 12 years with Trump as the outsider that they're like, as long as it's a Trump person, maybe we could use something that's a little bit more, whatever, you know, calm, a little bit less crazy. I'm just throwing out a theory, you know, that that's possible. And that's a rationale for kind of an establishment handover. A MAGA establishment. Yeah, handover, not like a populist uprising. And maybe that's where the right is headed, and you know, less interest in some populist replacement like Tucker Carlson. I don't know. I just think that's something to continue to monitor. I think that overanalyzing this stuff maybe can be a little bit, because like I said, I think that a lot of them are just like, they like Marco right now. He seems like he's doing a good job, and now they're just kind of telling us why.
That's right. And I do not want to over, like, read into this. Exactly. I guess the reason I'm so fascinated by it is for two reasons. One is, I actually think people liking Rubio has, even though some of these people are like, what an embarrassment of riches, these men, you know, these great people that Trump has around him. But I think for a lot of people, it's just them souring on JD. And they're like, the other one sort of in the offing is Rubio.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is interesting just to track, is that as we watch the Tucker, Marjorie Taylor Greene, America First wing, sort of break with Trump and become a thing of its own, and then versus the MAGA establishment, you can see a world where J.D. Vance, in an attempt to try to be over both of those and sort of bring them together, actually ends up in the sour spot. And it's sort of a MAGA establishment mm-hmm. versus America First head to head. And J.D. Vance, like, there's no place for him. So it's just an possible. Interesting thing to watch. It's just possible.
Now, among other things.
Does it? Okay. Well, you know, this is why I listen to voters. They often know where things are going a little bit more than.
She's got a lot of Trump voting friends.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So JBL has been talking about Don Jr. as like the obvious replacement. And I push back on this all the time because I just don't see it. Also, it never comes up. Like, I've never heard a voter be like, you know who I'm really got my eye on. But since JBL and I've been arguing about it, I've started asking it specifically in the groups what people think of the idea of Don Jr. running. And so this is those two groups of Louisiana Republicans. We talked about it with both of them. Let's hear what they had to say about Don Jr.
We don't really know a whole lot about him politically. You know what I mean? Just be like, based on that's Trump's son, depending on what our other options would be, you know, I wouldn't be against it, you know.
Hard pass on him. You didn't really hear much of his name before Trump became president, even as a business person. I mean, I know he's had his own personal successes, but most of them had been because of who his father is. You hear more about his struggles with drug addiction and, you know, his downfalls than you do any positive. I think he's a really good public speaker, but I don't feel like he really has the knowledge behind him to lead our country and do what would need to be done.
I feel like not in 28, maybe down the road, but
yeah, most definitely farther down the road.
I think if you give Junior, I will call him Junior, if you give him another 10, 15 years with the right experience and, you know, following his father's example, I think he'll be a good candidate. I really do. You go back, look at the Kennedys. look at the Bushes and all of the issues we've had with both of those families over the years. And we've had some pretty good politicians or leaders come out of that. So give him a fair shake and I think he'll be all right, you know.
I think maybe Eric Trump. I think he's sharp. But I agree, not in 28. Not in 28.
At the end of the day, he still has to get elected. But I don't know, like, what are his qualifications? Like, is it just because his daddy was president? Like, suddenly now, like, of course, Donald Trump didn't have many either. But, yeah, so I guess I'm just a little skeptical.
Rather than Don Jr., I think Jared Kushner has more experience and is getting more experience these days. And I'd prefer to vote for him than Trump just because of the Trump name, because he's the son of Donald Trump, as far as that goes.
So, Tim, your thesis on Don Jr. was that he comes across as the idiot kid. How do you think these clips jive with that particular analysis?
I think that, look, my one caveat to this is we're not in a campaign. And if we ended up in a campaign and the chips fell where, for whatever reason, there was not a compelling case being made to these voters by the other Republicans, and Don Jr. decided to run and his dad got fully behind him. And, who knows? Like, this is crazy. Our country's crazy. The Republican Party's crazy. You could imagine a bandwagon effect occurring. Like, it's not a 0% chance. But, like, the weakness of the case is just laid out there. And, you know, the woman who made the casual point, well, Donald Trump didn't have any qualifications either. It was the one woman who's like the most hostile to Trump in both focus groups. Mm-hmm. Like, she was the closest person to contributing to the Bush line. And she just felt like things were going poorly. And everybody else, though, I think that they think that Trump was a very successful businessman. And that was exactly what we needed for the country. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they don't see Trump like we see Trump.
That's right.
So, you know what I mean? I think that that's like the weakness of the JVL case is that I think that JVL sees Trump Jr. as he sees Trump. And so it's like, why not? They're both clowns. They both used daddy's money. Like, they both appealed to the MAGA Volk. Maybe you could do it. And there's not nothing to that. But I think that, like, the problem is a lot of the voters and MAGA voters look at them and see very different things. Like, they see the dad as somebody who is very successful on his own and the son who's whatever, you know, kind of a little bit clownish. And so, you know, I think you saw that in that group. And you start to see, I wouldn't see fatigue. There's not really Trump fatigue, but it's subtle. But you do hear the not in 28.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like it's like a Trump break. We could use a little break here.
Yeah.
Let's see what else happens.
Yeah. Let's give somebody else a try. If we put up some stiff and the Democrats beat them, maybe we're going to have to go back to the Trump family in 32. So I know that now everybody's breaking out in hives. But, like, just using that group as an example, you can kind of hear that. Like, you could imagine that world, right, where the Democrats win a blowout in 2028 over somebody, and it's like, maybe we do need to turn back to Trump. He was the one that could win. I don't think that's crazy to think about, but I think it's a tough row to hoe for him in 28.
Yeah, I do love just the casual, like, after all the hostility to dynastic politics that we saw, from people be like, you know, political dynasties were good, actually.
We just got RFK. The Kennedys were great. Yeah, we had a period. We got a period of bad ones, but then we came around. We got this great one with the brain worm in his head.
All right, Tim Miller, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great to talk to you. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to The Bulwark on YouTube, and become a Bulwark Plus member at thebulwark.com. Come to our live shows. We'll do all the things. Come see us next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.